chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass may have in the middle of it. Grass may have in the middle. We are grass may have.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness, we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Got a full boat this evening. We've got some clips on immigration, Adam Schiff's treachery, with Michael Cohen and interviewing him four times over 10 hours in New York and et cetera. And we're going to start off this with this very, very important interview and information about this Adam Schiff controversy that's just broken the news in the last day or two. So here we go. Sean Hannity talking about Michael Cohen and Adam Schiff and his treachery. Here we go now. Listen carefully.
Tonight. All right, we continue our investigation into the deep state. A lot of news with this Bruce Orr testimony just released tonight. We'll check in with Ed Henry, John Solomon, Sarah Carter, and the congressman who, with more details on whether or not Cohen was coached by Schiff's team, as Fox is reporting. And we have two villains of the day today. Two. Straight ahead. All right, joining us now with the very latest surrounding Congressman Adam Schiff, possibly coaching Michael Cohen or his staff prior to his appearance before the House Oversight Committee, and also the release of the Bruce Orr interview, Fox News chief national correspondent, our own Ed Henry. Ed, this is the beginning of a cascade, because there are a ton of those interviews that I believe are going to now be released.
Well, Sean, it could be just the beginning, because Democrat Adam Schiff is on record refusing to even answer if he would accept Robert Mueller's conclusions if the Mueller report does not find Russian collusion. Instead, Schiff told CNN last month he's moving forward with his own House Intel investigation so that the Russia probe will continue no matter what Mueller finds. So in case you're wondering if this will be a fair investigation of the president, Fox's Catherine Herridge has found out, as you noted, that Schiff's Democratic staff came here to New York four times to meet with former Trump attorney Michael Cohen for over 10 hours ahead of his 7 hours of public testimony. Republican Congressman Mike Turner told Fox this clearly shows to him the witness was coached inappropriately. Sources familiar with the Cohen meeting say that the House Intel staffers covered such topics as whether the president inflated some of his assets to insurance companies and his close relationship with the head of the National Enquirer. That raises eyebrows about how that ties in to oversight of intelligence matters, which is what Schiff is supposed to be doing. In fact, those topics were among the ones that Cohen ended up discussing in his public testimony that went after the president. So it is sparking questions tonight about whether Cohen was coached. Now, Schiff's office insists to us nothing inappropriate happened. They tell us it's standard procedure to talk to witnesses about what they previously told Congress and to get a preview of what they may now say in public. But, Sean, it's interesting. Tonight, the president is tweeting, quoting out something else Congressman Turner said about how he believes the only time Michael Cohen told the truth was when he pled guilty to lying to Congress.
All right, unbelievable story as it continues to develop. Ed Henry with us tonight on this breaking news night. Now, earlier today, the president's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, had this to say about Michael Cohen's testimony last week. Take a look.
If they don't prosecute him, it would be a complete outrage after what they did to Flynn, a bunch of other people. His perjury is overwhelmingly proven. How about I didn't ask for a job, and I wouldn't have taken one? Put next to that a tape going back to that time with Chris Cuomo in which he says that he wants to be chief of staff to the President of the United States.
All right, here now with much more is Ohio Congressman Mike Turner. He is the lawmaker who sent a letter to Cohen's legal team asking for clarification about their meetings with Congressman Adam Schiff. Also with us, Executive Vice President at the Hill, John Solomon, Fox News investigative reporter Sarah Carter. Congressman, let me begin with you, because first, the Bruce Orr issue, coupled with the Adam Schiff issue, we now know this is going to be a cascading, unstoppable event where we are now going to have access to all of these interviews and all of the contradictions that I pointed out. But more importantly, there is, you know, Adam Schiff, remember, he met with, he just ran into Fusion GPS's Glenn Simpson in Aspen, his staff, 10 hours. That's a problem. And remember what he did to Chairman Nunes. He had a fit over the whole issue that Nunes actually went to the White House and demanded recusal, et cetera, in an investigation. Tell us where you think this is going.
Well, Sean, this is absolutely shocking. I mean, when you look at the fact that we learned in the Government Oversight Committee that Cohen had had conversation with Adam Schiff, and then we learned from Fox News reporting now and Lanny Davis reporting that, you know, four trips to New York totaling over 10 hours of meetings, that's not just talking to someone about the logistics of their testimony. That's actually talking to them about their testimony. That's when coaching can happen. That's when suggesting of answers happens. This is certainly very concerning, and it shows orchestration. I mean, they say this is a professional investigation. This is professional orchestration. And when you look at the comparison between the amount of time the Democrats questioned him at oversight, it was probably maybe 4 hours of Democrat questioning that was public testimony, and over 10 hours in private preparation for that testimony, that certainly is not appropriate and is not professional.
Well, it's beyond inappropriate. Now, John Solomon, we now have obvious coaching. What else would they possibly be meeting for? And Cohen said, we were going over the questions, his testimony. So we have coaching. We have literally the Schiff's own collusion on tape as he thinks he's speaking with the Russian operatives, trying to get Russian compromised material on the president for electoral purposes. Then, of course, he hired the one guy in the country, the one guy that still believes in this debunked dossier, which its author doesn't even believe in. And we now know in the case, you know, he's on tape colluding with Russians. What needs to happen, and how big is this, especially with the release of that OR transcript?
I think, personally, the committee should demand of its chairman all of his contacts with witnesses, including witnesses who may have at some point stopped cooperating with the committee. I have some reason to believe that Chairman Schiff and his staff had contacts with people who subsequently stopped cooperating with the committee. I think that's an important question. If he believes in transparency, like he says, put all of your contacts down on the table. Let us know all the witnesses you've been talking to behind the scenes out of view. But, you know, a week ago I said, John, I thought Michael...
documents available to the American public and to Congress, whether there's national security issues regarding some of the documentation, that can be taken care of before the release. But it has to be transparent. Sean, there's also another issue. I mean, we know that Adam Schiff, and I reported on this several weeks ago, has gone as far as hiring a National Security Council personnel that worked in the White House that had access to executive privilege documents onto his investigative staff.
That
we need to know
stand.
What's it cannot stand, because there has to be a line that they cannot cross. And we know now that Cohen has lied over and over again. Sean, another thing that I think will permit lies and contradictions between who's telling the truth, Bruce Orr, Glenn Simpson, about his meetings and his contacts with Christopher Steele when he spoke to the FBI. Rod Rosenstein, John, wrote a great piece on that. And it's another contradiction as to who and when he knew about Nellie Orr. I mean, Rod Rosenstein told lawmakers, he basically said he wouldn't answer any of their questions as to when the Department of Justice knew when Nellie Orr was actually a conduit, her husband was a conduit for her information. And then later it's discovered in his own testimony that Rod Rosenstein was the man that he met with, was the man that he got the information from. So everyone here is lying.
It's 2 years this month that you and John started all this, and that we've been unpeeling every layer of the onion. You guys have done a great job. Other people as well. Congressman, welcome to the club. We're glad to have you as well. All right, when we come back, more breaking news. Shocking past statements by Joe Biden that could cost him the nomination for 2020. We're going to show them all to you coming up next. Later, Congresswoman Omar has the nerve to attack the late John McCain now in the midst of this anti-Semitism scandal. What does it tell you about her? But more importantly, what a week of exposure for the Democratic Party. Bigotry, anti-Semitism, they did nothing about it. Straight ahead.
So here we are. We're having information now. Some of it from the mouth of Michael Cohen during his testimony before Congress is that they actually sent staff members up there four times. This is Adam Schiff's committee in Congress, the Oversight Committee in the House. They sent staff members up four times to New York and interviewed Michael Cohen over a 10-hour period. So they were talking more than just preparing him to testify in a general way, which I think they might be allowed to do. But you spend 10 hours with one of your star witnesses over a period of four different visits, it's really a problem. And Adam Schiff is going to have a hard time explaining that. But he'll conjure up some kind of a half-wit or half-ass idea, I know, that try to counter this. But the evidence is the evidence, and they have evidence that he did send those people up there over that period of time. So it's going to be hard to repute the allegations that are coming out of this. Next, we're going to have Tom Fenton with Judicial Watch. And he gives a fine overall view of this 81, you know, people that have been, you know, they've requested documents for. So the House members and different committees have gone dark raving mad. But here we go with Tom Fenton.
Hi, everyone. Judicial Watch President Tom Fenton here with our weekly update here on social media. Thank you for joining us. A lot of corruption being exposed this week and continuing this week. So I'll provide updates to you on new documents we found about DOJ, Fusion GPS collusion against President Trump. Some shocking information there. We have a new lawsuit over the FISA court secrecy, FISA warrant secrecy, trying to expose the cover-up there. And I'll start off, I think, though, with renewed attacks and harassment of President Trump by leftists in Congress who are, I think, taking on the mantle that had been started or the mantle that was first created under the Obama administration in terms of its illicit spying and targeting of President Trump, handed off to Mueller, and continuing now through the House of Representatives, now controlled by the president's political opponents, who were also controlling these other entities that I've been talking about. This week, the House Judiciary Committee, as part of an effort to overthrow the president, they want to remove him through impeachment. They don't have any good reason to do so, so they're trying to create one by sending out 81 document requests to virtually anybody and anyone associated with President Trump. It's truly breathtaking in the scope of the harassment of President Trump and his associates and his family, and I've never seen anything like it, especially in light of the fact there have been two congressional investigations into the so-called Russia collusion scandal that have gone nowhere in the sense that they've shown there's no Russia collusion with President Trump. So they've decided to move on, which is to investigate every crackpot theory every leftist has concerning President Trump, targeting his taxes, targeting his business practices, targeting his activities before president, before he was president, and targeting anyone, however tertiary, to Mr. Trump with harassing document requests. Now, these are document requests that in many ways are repetitive of other requests that other committees have sent to these individuals and entities and requests that Congress has sent to these individuals and entities. So this is just piling on the part of Jerry Nadler, who is the new Democratic chairman of the Judiciary Committee. And as I said, they want to end the presidency of the United States. Now, remember, the coup began during the 2017, the first few months of the Trump administration, where you had DOJ, FBI officials discussing removing the president through the improper use of the 25th Amendment, talking about wearing a wire on the president to get evidence to support that audacious coup effort. And then growing out of those conversations also was the appointment of a special counsel to try to find information to warrant the removal of President Trump. And now that's continuing through the House of Representatives because, as you know, all of that activity that I described was reliant on alleged evidence created by anti-Trumpers in the FBI in collusion with Hillary Clinton's and the DNC's Fusion GPS operation that was concocting information related to President Trump and Russia, just making it up as it relates to President Trump and Russia. So that hasn't gotten them what they needed to get, which was collusion evidence. They had the excuse to begin an investigation or the pretext to begin an investigation, but because it was a fraud pretext, it went nowhere. So now the House is trying to, as I say, figure out what else they can get on President Trump. I mean, when you see Jerry Nadler go on TV and says, I have no evidence of obstruction of justice, and the purpose of the investigation is to get it. I mean, that's the Alice in Wonderland approach to congressional investigations. There's no evidence of misconduct, no evidence or facts related to misconduct by the president warning these types of investigations. You know, I'm old enough to remember, believe it or not, the Obama administration. Judicial Watch investigated President Obama's conduct as a senator, his connections with Chicago. The House and the Senate didn't do anything like that. I mean, the idea that you would go in and just for the yuck of it, go in and investigate President before he was president based on nothing, is just unbelievable to me. And so all of these individuals are facing massive legal costs as a result of these letters. And, you know, my view on this is that these individuals should just say no to the document requests. They're harassing. They're designed to burden anyone close to President Trump. And what happens if you refuse? Well, the House of Representatives, the Judiciary Committee, can issue a subpoena. And you can refuse the subpoena in the sense that you can go to court and seek relief from having to follow the subpoena or respond to the subpoena. Or maybe you could just say, I'm not going to respond to the subpoena. If you want to enforce it, go to court and I'll answer you in court. And so in theory, the House of Representatives, the Judiciary Committee, could be forced to go to court 81 times to pursue its efforts to destroy President Trump. Now, is everyone going to respond that way? Obviously not. Some will. But there's got to be a fight about this. And, you know, it's interesting because Judicial Watch generally believes in oversight. We want to do oversight. But this is not oversight. This is abuse of power to target a president because you have a political dispute with him. Now, I understand that is the basis for a lot of oversight. But it can't be the basis for abusive oversight in a sense that you're sending out 81 document requests in one day, and we're being told this is just the beginning, that you can expect more. And it's targeting the president, his family members, his personal businesses, individuals who have been put through the ringer and abused already by both Congress and the Mueller operation, like Carter Page, the president's lawyers, which is obviously, they're just obviously picking a fight there. And so, you know, there's got to be a pushback. And, you know, I suggest one constitutional pushback, or I think one constitutional way of thinking about this is, why isn't there any oversight of Congress? And if I were the president, I would highlight the fact that the Freedom of Information Act doesn't apply to Congress. So Congress says that we have oversight responsibility over the executive branch, and they've given Judicial Watch and the rest of the American people the ability to conduct their own oversight, which we do better than Congress does through the Freedom of Information Act, but they've made themselves immune from the Freedom of Information Act. So there's no oversight of Congress. And so we can't ask questions about Ilhan Omar. We can't ask questions about Nancy Pelosi directly, or any Republican, any senator, any member of the House, and have those any refusals to answer those questions be litigated in court. I mean, we can always ask the questions, but they can just tell us no, and there's nothing we can do about it. So all those sexual harassment claims that were settled with taxpayer money, we can't ask anyone on the Hill for the information and go to court if they don't give it to us, unlike what is available to us with the executive branch and the Freedom of Information Act. So if I were the president, you know, you litigate your rights, you defend your rights, both as president and personally. But you should also highlight the fact that Congress is not accountable to the American people through the Freedom of Information Act. And I think that's important. And also, why doesn't the president provide oversight over Congress? The legislative branch provides oversight over the executive branch. The executive branch has constitutional responsibilities that need to be informed by documents potentially from Congress. The president should think about providing oversight over Congress, asking Congress for documents. Maybe Congress can be asked for documents about Adam Schiff's collusion with Michael Cohen and Lanny Davis. Michael Cohen, the president's former attorney, who now it's reported was colluding with Adam Schiff on this testimony that turned out to be false. Maybe Congress could be asked questions about that through the executive branch. Wouldn't that be an interesting test, constitutionally speaking? Maybe Congress could be asked questions about its travel practices, its personnel practices, its administration, its spending of money. Billions are spent by Congress as a branch. They don't only appropriate funds for the agencies, the executive branch and the judiciary, but they appropriate funds for themselves. Where's the check on that? So I think we need to rethink this transparency issue in the sense of broadening it beyond the executive branch and demand transparency from Congress. Oh, yes, and from the federal courts, who are also immune from the Freedom of Information Act. So we've got this wildly berserk request mania from the Judiciary Committee. We've got Cohen, who I've talked about repeatedly, violating the president's rights 6 ways to Sunday in collusion with the Democrats in Congress, both as an attorney in terms of the attorney-client privileges and other privileges, and then, frankly, just lying outright. You know, I always take with a grain of salt when the opposition accuses a witness they don't like of lying under oath. You know, because what else? You know, that's an easy claim to make. But I've been persuaded that there are significant perjury issues for Michael Cohen. First of all, based on his motives, whether or not he did want a job in the White House. He says he didn't want a job in the White House, and it turns out he did, and there's all sorts of evidence both in the public domain and from his own words that he did. And then he testified how he didn't seek a pardon, and when in fact he did. Again, represented by a Clinton lawyer, a Clinton associate, Lanny Davis. I don't know if he actually ever represented the Clintons, but he certainly worked Clinton White House as a lawyer and was close to Hillary Clinton, as I've described repeatedly here. And now it turns out Adam Schiff communicated with Cohen before the hearing. His staff at least met with him for 10 hours. A lot of questions there. And all this needs to be examined. But it shows you, and in many ways this is just, again, more corruption. See, when you target an American for illicit purposes, it's usually hard to honestly do. You got to kind of abuse your office to do so. So that's what was happening at the Department of Justice and the FBI and the State Department and NSA and CIA, all of which were President Obama had an all-hands-on-deck approach to trying to destroy Donald Trump. And we're seeing it now with the House of Representatives with abuse of power to try to challenge President Trump. Look, I understand the Democrats are on the House of Representatives, and there's going to be increased oversight from their ideological perspective on the issues they care about of the Trump administration. But this is an oversight. This is a vendetta, and this is a continuation of, in my view, the slow-motion coup that began almost immediately upon the president's election. So we'll be monitoring that, and we'll be doing our own investigations. We already have an ethics complaint pending against Adam Schiff over his illicitly confirming classified information outside the rules of his committee in the House. Of course, the Ethics Committee on the Hill is controlled by 3 Republicans and 3 Democrats. So all you need to do is have the Democrats or the Republicans stand in union, and nothing will happen. And that's what's happened with Adam Schiff. The ethics process is broken in that regard, and Schiff is being protected. But it doesn't mean he's not ethically challenged, because it's pretty clear he broke the rules. And now we have this new information about his collusion with Cohen and his secret meeting with Glenn Simpson, the head of Fusion GPS out in Aspen, Colorado. So more ethics concerns for Adam Schiff, who runs the Intelligence Committee. So this is a big deal, and the president's facing attacks from all fronts. And I want our Congress to defend the republic, not undermine it. And this is what I fear is happening with this congressional jihad against the president and all of his people. So that being said, Judicial Watch does its own work, and we do our own investigations, because now Congress isn't going to investigate the misconduct that I've described in terms of the targeting of President Trump. So it's up to Judicial Watch to do the heavy lifting and the hard work to get documents out about the deep state attempts and the slow-motion coup that I've described. And to that end, Judicial Watch has sued the agencies at well over 30 times to get documents about the FISA court abuses, the FISA warrant abuses, the collusion, the conspiracies, the Peter Strzok, Lisa Page information. You name it. Anything out there, we probably either have a lawsuit or a Freedom of Information Act request on, in terms of the illicit targeting of President Trump and the attendant and related cover-up of the Hillary Clinton issue, which you can't separate from each other, because they're all part of the piece, because they were colluding with Hillary Clinton and her people as they were protecting her at the same time from any serious investigation of her misconduct. So we hit a major find. We have a major find of documents as a result of one of these lawsuits, and we received this is the page. This is the package, 339 pages of documents from the government related to Bruce Orr's communication with Christopher Steele and Fusion GPS and all the rest, from his time at the Justice Department. So by way of background, Bruce Orr was at the time the number four individual at the Justice Department, and he was talking all the time to Fusion GPS and Christopher Steele, who worked for Fusion GPS, and Glenn Simpson, who also worked for Fusion GPS. And on top, while at the time, his wife Nellie Orr, a Russia expert, also worked for Fusion GPS. Now, what was Fusion GPS up to? Well, they were the ones, and Christopher Steele specifically, was creating one of the nasty dossiers directed at President Trump. So this DOJ official whose wife works for Fusion GPS is talking to Fusion GPS repeatedly. And Fusion GPS was paid for with secret money by Hillary Clinton's campaign and Democratic National Committee. So it's scandal on top of scandal. And the new documents show repeated contacts between Orr and Steele and Glenn Simpson of Fusion GPS. And Nellie Orr may as well have had a desk at the Justice Department, given the extensive communication she had with her husband and others at DOJ about Russia. The documents show that Orr and Steele were, as I say, in regular communication. Orr repeatedly thanks Steele for the updates, and at one point assures Steele he will pass this information along to his colleagues. Now, why is it controversial? Because, first of all, Orr shouldn't have been talking to Steele, because Steele was an FBI guy. He was an FBI informant. Again, another part of the scandal is that Steele was being paid with FBI funds at the same time the Clinton campaign was paying him through Fusion GPS. So he's working for the Clinton campaign and for the FBI. But at one point, the FBI let him go in November or October of 2016 because of leaks he was giving the media about his communications with the FBI. Remember, they were creating this dossier to destroy Trump. So part of that destroy Trump effort meant leaking it, in addition to working with their friends in the FBI to use it as a pretext to spy on Trump, which in fact they did through these controversial FISA warrants that Judicial Watch also exposed. Now, Judicial Watch exposed all of this. We exposed the FBI paying Steele 11 times. They met with him 13 times in 2016. They paid him 11 of those times. And despite his being fired, these documents show that Orr was in nearly constant communications with Steele. And I'll give you some specifics. Of course, we had to get this through a lawsuit. We filed the lawsuit in March of last year. I'm not quite sure when we filed the Freedom of Information Act request, but I'm sure it was a few months before that. So this takes a long time to get these documents out. And it's interesting. We asked for these communications Orr may have had with Steele, his travel requests, and calendar entries. So what did the government do? They gave us all of his travel requests first, even though they had all this other good stuff that they were holding back. So we get production after production of travel requests that really don't, they knew were unexciting. Of course, we asked for him because we want to know what he was up to. But they finally gave us the mother load. Again, here. These are the 339 pages. They're heavily redacted. Much of it is material that Nellie Orr was sending to her friends at the Justice Department and her husband at the Justice Department about Russia. But they show include text messages between Orr and Steele, some of which have been reported on but never released. See, this is the problem. Congress has some of these documents, but we can't get them. And this is why Judicial Watch has to go to court, and it's important we go to court, so that we get them too. The American people need to see this material. Because without Judicial Watch's lawsuits, we won't see this material. Congress may never release it. Or if they release it, they'll only release select portions of it. But you can see it all on the Internet right now. Go to our website at judicialwatch.org. And I frankly encourage you to read these documents because I'm not going to be able to describe them in their entirety to you, obviously. We can't even put everything we want to put in a press release. The press release, I think, is 8 pages long. So go and read these documents and read about the collusion between a senior Justice Department official and an agent of Hillary Clinton.
Coming up next, we have two or three interviews that Ingram gave on Ingram Angle this last Friday night about immigration. And they're just pouring in there. We can't ignore it. There is a crisis. And let me play this clip for you, and you'll better understand what's going on down there. Here we go.
Hi, Laura. The media has focused almost solely on the Central American caravans whose journeys toward the U.S. have in most cases abruptly ended in Tijuana, where they wait for their U.S. asylum claims to be processed. But that's a small part of a much bigger picture. For example, as we have been reporting and as the Arizona Republic is now handling in depth, thousands of Central American migrants are still crossing and being smuggled across open borders. The way it works is they turn themselves over to Border Patrol agents, apply for asylum, and are then released until their case comes to court. Last month alone, more than 1,100 families, mostly from Central America, were apprehended near El Paso, then transported to Tucson and released. They are initially housed in Tucson at makeshift shelters, including a former monastery that holds 200 people, but for months has struggled to accommodate the constant flow of families. In fact, El Paso is now the second busiest crossing point along the southern border behind the Rio Grande Valley. And then there's this. Apprehensions of migrant families this year from last year is up 1,689%. And asylum-seeking families make up more than 60% of all apprehensions, which leads to the domino effect, meaning 25% of on-duty Border Patrol agents have to be diverted to care for, transport, and process those migrant families. And when you take away a quarter of the enforcement, the border is less secure, which exacerbates the problem. And now Tucson is feeling pressure, and not just at shelters, but at hospitals, food banks, and schools. Laura.
Trace, unbelievable. Thank you very much. And here now to react, a sheriff of one of those communities that spans more than 100 miles along the Mexico border. Pima County, Arizona, Sheriff Mark Napier joins me now. Sheriff, you heard a report. What are you seeing? Are you seeing violence, unrest as a result of illegal immigration in your community specifically?
Well, Laura, anybody that would deny that there is a crisis, a humanitarian crisis, a public safety crisis on our border is simply being intellectually dishonest. We have tremendous influx of migrants and no way for the system to care for them, especially because the advent of unaccompanied minors and family units is something the system is just not adapted to address. So we have these temporary shelters, and sometimes we even have them just dropped off at bus stops and left to wander into the community. So this is a humanitarian crisis that we've never experienced. I've been in this valley for 32 years. I've never seen anything like this. And then the leveraging of migrant traffic to then backfill drug trafficking behind it, because as the last person pointed out, Border Patrol's overwhelmed.
Look at this line. I just want to play something really quick for you. This is from Jacob Soboroff, who's done a lot of reporting on the border on MSNBC. Let's watch.
The reason the numbers are going up are not because of some crazy phenomenon we've never seen before. Donald Trump and his policies and his rhetoric are encouraging people in some cases, forcing people in other cases to cross the border illegally.
I've never heard of anything more ridiculous in my life. Trump is encouraging people to come? Sheriff, very quickly.
Completely absurd. That is absolutely false. It's the conditions in Central America, the desperation that other than Mexican people are feeling to come here in hope of a better life is exacerbating that condition. The president has absolutely nothing to do with encouraging this behavior, and that's just a silly argument.
Yeah, it's one of the more disingenuous things I've heard on this issue, and I've heard a lot of disingenuous things. Sheriff, thank you very much. By the way, we invited some Tucson sheriffs onto the show tonight, but they curiously said no. We got to remind them that they're representing the citizens of Arizona, not one particular constituency that happens to be transported into the state from Texas. All right, the last bite. You don't want to miss it when we come back. It's a good one.
The sheriff down there in Pima County, Arizona, is having hell. Everybody knows what's going on along the border. It's becoming like a Wild West show down there. So, you know, we've got to try to wake up to this. And, oh, by the way, just this week, Hillary, speaking down in Alabama, got four Pinocchios from, of all people, Washington Post. Are you kidding me? Let me play that report right now. Listen to this. See what you think about the Pinocchios.
Well, even the mainstream media is taking issue with Hillary Clinton's recent appearance in Alabama. One America's Kerr McKinney has that report.
The Washington Post fact-checks claims made by Hillary Clinton about voter suppression. Wednesday's article gives Clinton a 4 Pinocchio rating for making false and misleading statements during an appearance over the weekend in Alabama. The fact-checkers called out Clinton for falsely claiming Wisconsin was affected by the Supreme Court striking down an outdated section of the Voting Rights Act and for saying it caused voter registration in Georgia to drop.
I was the first person who ran for president without the protection of the Voting Rights Act, and I will tell you it makes a really big difference. And it doesn't just make a difference in Alabama and Georgia. It made a difference in Wisconsin.
When the justices made their decision back in 2013, Wisconsin was not covered by Section 4, which was the part that was struck down by the court as unconstitutional. And in regard to her claim voter registration fell between 2012 and 2016 in Georgia, a state previously covered by Section 4, records show the total number actually increased by many thousands. Clinton tried to use this false statistic as a way to explain her defeat to then-Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump. The Post then claimed Clinton misrepresented the findings of studies that said stricter voter ID laws turned away voters in Wisconsin.
It made a difference in Wisconsin, where the best studies that have been done said somewhere between 40 and 80,000 people were turned away from the polls because of the color of their skin, because of their age, because of whatever excuse could be made up to stop a fellow American citizen from voting.
The fact checkers explained how Clinton exaggerated some of the numbers and language when suggesting people were discriminated against at the polls. They also cited a researcher behind one of those studies who cautioned against using his findings in two counties to make a larger statement about all of Wisconsin. Another issue plaguing Clinton's generalization about the 2016 race is that she refused to consider that minority voters were not as motivated to vote for her as they were for Barack Obama in 2012. This likely accounts for some of the lower voter turnout in some areas and not voter suppression. Kara McKinney, One America News.
Some additional news. We've got jihadists being surrounded over in Syria. Okay, and there's an enclave there they surrounded, and they're letting the women and children out. And the Daily Mail has an excellent article on that, and tremendous, beautiful, well, tragically, you know what I mean, sad photographs. But the last battle of ISIS is the way Drudge Report is carrying it. But they're evacuating women and children out of this stronghold over there before they do the last attack, you know. But the women and children are surviving that are coming out right now as non-combatants. And that's going on over in Syria. So ISIS seems to be winding down over there to their last, you know what I mean, vestiges of resistance. And the races, we've got all these candidates now, these Democratic candidates. Oh, Cortez is saying, oh, she's beginning to get out of control. And the latest thing there is it's possible that Cortez and her campaign manager, who's a very wealthy person, have misused close to $1 million worth of funds. And they might have allocated it or contributed to improperly by being part and head of a PAC and then also head of her campaign, the same people. Those are outside the rules and the laws, election laws. So that it remains to be seen whether or not there'll be any charges against Cortez and her campaign manager. We don't know because a lot of things, these things are just shuffled under the bridge and that's it. The Smollett, Justice Smollett in Chicago, he was indicted on 16 felony counts. My gosh, that's ruinous for his career and everything. And what do you want to do? He's charged with, or accused of. He's not convicted now. So let's get off of that. He's been charged with trying to set up a false flag attack on himself. In the way that they're explaining it, that he explained it to the press, was that these were Trump supporters that attacked him. So that's what's continuing on up in Chicago. Ilhan Omar trashes Obama. Hope and Change was a miracle, you know. She's the one that's been criticizing a great deal. Here's what she says. Ilhan Omar, Obama's pretty face, he got away with murder. Okay, that's the lead byline there on New York Post. And she's saying his nice demeanor and smile and stuff like that let him get away with murder. There was also a interview that and I might have time to play it toward the end of this, but it was done, yeah, it was done with Jerome Corsi. Let me play that for you now. And it gets into the fake birth certificate that Obama put together. Let me play that right now. So just listen to this very carefully coming up next.
Mr. Corsi, this letter that you received from the Judiciary Committee, what exactly are they requesting that you provide them now?
Well, there's three specific requests. One has to do with anything I did with foreign countries, another with the Russian Federation, and a third with WikiLeaks. And it's pretty ridiculous. I've given all this information to the special counselor in far greater detail. It's going to be very expensive. It's really harassment. I don't have paper copies. I've got external hard drives, which I turned over to the FBI. They extracted the information. It's going to cost me thousands of dollars. And in the end, I didn't have any contacts with WikiLeaks. I didn't have any contacts with Russians.
So all the information, did they return that information to you, or do they still have it?
Oh, they still have it, the special counselor's office. But I'd be happy if they turned it over and saved me thousands of dollars and endless harassment to go get it again.
So what happens next year? I mean, do you plan to comply with the request?
Well, I don't see, I mean, there's no reason to fight it. If we fight it, it'll just delay it. I just think it's, again, harassment. This is more Russian collusion. And after 2 years, we don't have a single indictment on the specific topic of Russian collusion by the Mueller team.
I guess, you know, you did send an email to Roger Stone, who you've long had an association with, I think it was on August 2nd, 2016, referencing Julian Assange. You said, word is friend and embassy, meaning Assange, plans two more dumps, impact plan to be very damaging. In the past, you've said that you used what you call forensic analysis or deduction to figure out that they were going to do that. Do you really expect people to believe that, though? Because, I mean, it doesn't seemed to make sense that you were able to just deduce that. It sounds like somebody told you that.
Well, I don't know what people are going to believe and what they're not going to believe. They may not believe the truth, but the truth is I did connect the dots and figure it out. In fact, if you take a look at my book, I wrote a whole book on all of this. None of this is secret. I've discussed this many times. Silent No More is
right,
my book.
You said you connect dots. Jeff Toobin, wrote a piece about this last month, saying basically that your claim is dubious. He said, quote, there was nothing about the prior disclosures that would give you any basis to predict that Podesta's emails would also be made public, and that the evidence indicates that someone told you that Podesta's emails were going to be disclosed, rather than
Anderson, I want to interject here, because we're not going to get into areas that deal with the Stone prosecution or anything else. There's a gag order there. Jerry came on to talk about Gerald Nadler's request.
I mean, he's talked about all this before on television numerous times. So
he has, but we're not getting into it now. We have a judicial order. Roger Stone, is out there saying things. We're not going to violate that gag order.
Let me just say that, look, for what Mr. Toobin believes or doesn't believe is not my problem. What I've attested to, and we'd spent 20 hours, I wrote this in Silent No More, we spent 20 hours with a special prosecutor going over everybody I've been in contact with, 2016, 2017. My attorneys, at that time, David Gray, who's still my attorney, as well as Larry, we begged the special prosecutor, if you know anyone we were talking to, tell us. I'm confident I had no contact with Julian Assange directly or indirectly, and I did connect the dots and figure it out. Whether people believe that or not is not my problem.
Mueller has laid out claims that you lied multiple times in your interview with his office. You rejected the plea deal they offered. Where do you stand at this point with them? I mean, do you think they're going to prosecute
Anderson,
you?
He has not laid out claims that Dr. Corsi lied. He has not. In fact, that's the reason that Dr. Corsi is not indicted. That's simply not true.
Well,
and also, by the way,
the person referenced in the indictment on Roger Stone
is person number one. But Anderson, as I pointed out again, please read Silent No More. As I pointed out, the one count that Mueller wanted me to plead guilty to was testimony that Mueller had allowed me to amend. And I thought that was completely fraudulent. I was amending my testimony constantly. You've got to read the book.
Mm. Just lastly, I mean, there are obviously a number of people watching this who are going to say, look, you have been an advocate of many conspiracy theories, from President Obama not being born in the U.S. to, the questions about what really happened on 9/11.
No, I have not questioned that one. You may have accused me of that one, but before even, but I have not. I never wrote anything about 9/11 at all.
Well, I think you were talking about fire, on a radio show. I think I actually have a clip.
I have one clip on a radio show, but it never got published. We decided, ultimately, I changed my mind on that and did not publish it.
Well,
but here's my point. Here's my point.
Anderson, let me say one thing here, though, about the birth certificate. The birth certificate, there's been forensic analysis on that. He never said that Obama was born in another country, but the birth certificate appears to be fraudulent.
Now, you're saying forensic analysis by people linked with Joe Arpaio? Is that the forensic analysis you're talking about?
Well, people can get things right.
Is that the forensic analysis you're talking about?
There's other forensic analysis. The birth certificate uses the word African-American in 1961. That term was not used until Jesse Jackson.
So you don't believe that President Obama was born in the United States?
That's not what I said. I said the birth certificate, there's forensic analysis that is fraudulent. So don't beat up on my client because of that. That's inappropriate.
Anderson, I may not believe as well as readily as you do, perhaps, government official explanations.
Do you believe the president was born in the United States, or are you still?
As I said, and Larry's right on this, I say I want to see the official 1961 birth records from Kenya. That'll settle it. I don't know where he was born. I'm happy to see the 1961 records and admit I was wrong. The state of Hawaii will not show those records to anyone, including the law enforcement. I don't know why.
You did admit you were wrong about something just today, which I just want to point out. You apologized for a false story about Seth Rich stealing emails and releasing them to WikiLeaks, stealing them from the DNC.
And when I'm wrong, I'll admit it. There was one story that I relied upon an article that Admiral Lyons had written in the Washington Post. They subsequently retracted. And I agreed, because they retracted the story, I retracted my story. I didn't retract anything else I've written on Seth Rich. I didn't retract my statements that I think the theft of the DNC emails was likely an inside job. in deference to the Seth Rich family, I retracted one article that ended up being based on a story the Washington Post retracted. When I'm wrong, I'll be happy to admit it.
So I guess the question is, given your record on you know, on Obama's birth certificate, on the Seth Rich matter, why should people believe you?
Well, wait a second. There's nothing wrong with his record on the Obama birth certificate, Anderson. Don't twist things. You know, we came on your show.
The birther movement has been
discredited. Let me say something. We came on your show because I think you're more honest than the rest of the people on CNN. Right.
And I'm just
asking. Why don't you keep that?
You made this apology just today. Would be irresponsible of me not to ask you about it.
I don't object to you asking about it. I answered it. I apologize for one story.
Okay.
I've written 22 books since 2004. Two of them were number one bestsellers. Seven of them were on the bestseller list. I believe my books are well footnoted. People may not agree with me. I do not readily accept government explanations, as many people seem to. I challenge government explanations, and I will probably continue to do that as long as I'm alive.
Jerome Corsi, I appreciate your time, and Larry Klayman, thank you very much.
Thank you, Anderson.
Thank you.
See, this Anderson, these people are pretty slimy, you know. They'll start interviewing you, and then all of a sudden they'll stop and they'll say, well, da-da-da-da-da. They'll start making statements that have no basis in fact, that are all just conjured up an opinion, see. And then if you don't call them on it. Now, Larry Klayman was on this interview with Jerome Corsi, see. And so he called Anderson out on some of the misstatements that he was making during the interview. So that was very good. What they did not explain very thoroughly was that Frank Marshall Davis was an ardent Marxist communist out of Kansas, Chicago, and ended up in Honolulu. And we're getting a story over the years from different people. They're doing documentaries that Obama is the son of Frank Marshall Davis. So all of this thing about the birth certificate had to do with the actual birth certificate that was on file in Honolulu had to be withheld, but otherwise it would reveal that Frank Marshall Davis, a Marxist communist, would have direct, that Obama would have direct ties back to a Marxist communist father, which probably would have torpedoed his election or at least stymied it, or it would have subtracted from it with a certain number from the public. So that's really what this is about, and it's been proven by several people that the document that was presented by Obama was a fraudulent document. It was taken apart by some of the best forensic people in the country, and so it was a forgery. So it was not the actual birth certificate coming from. Now this thing about Kenya and all this stuff, these are false types of rabbit trails that they throw people off, see. And the thing is that if Frank Marshall Davis was Obama's real father, then Obama is a legitimate citizen, see, because he's born in the United States in Honolulu. They just wanted the conjecture there, and the opinion of many of top researchers is that they had to falsify this birth certificate to keep the fact unknown about Obama, Barack Obama's real father. Now, Obama's stepfather later would be Sotero. And Sotero, along with his mother, were part of a mission, according to historical deep state research here. And they were in Indonesia. And they were identifying communist elements in Indonesia. And so this is what his parents, what many researchers have concluded. And then they helped get rid of that communist opposition. And also Sukarno was gotten rid of too, and Suharto was brought in. Sukarno wanted to nationalize the oil interest in Indonesia. And so the big oil people and the mining people, the big mineral interest people worldwide, the internationalists, turned against Sukarno. Now Sukarno was friends with JFK also. And so you have that entangled mess, you know, in this whole story. But the way the story goes is Sukarno wanted to nationalize the oil and mineral interests in Indonesia. These international interests wanted those interests to continue because they were getting gold and a lot of oil beginning to prosper their companies and their interests. So Sukarno, when he tried to nationalize their interests, they said no, and they swept him out of office with a coup d'etat with Suharto. And the story goes that Obama's mother and stepdad were part of the mechanism to identify the communists, which were on the Sukarno side, and get rid of them. And there were quite a few that were killed, murdered during that period. So that sort of gives you some idea there. So getting back to the birth certificate that was presented, it has been proven to be fake, false, a forgery. And so, but the liberal left and these, they'll always, the birther, are you a birther? That's what they always say. So they say that to try to discredit anyone that's trying to make sense out of this birther issue, see. Now, are you a birther, meaning you're just a bad conspiratorial person and you're against, you know, Obama and all that. But, if you look at it in depth, and you research and look deeply into this, you'll find out what I'm saying is that probably Frank Marshall Davis was Obama's real dad. He happened to be a Marxist communist. That wouldn't bode well for Obama in the election, incoming election. So they hid the birth certificate. Going on, we've got like the Cortez may be in trouble because of the manipulation of funds from those two, that PAC to her campaign. We don't have proof yet of that, so these are merely allegations right now. So that's ongoing. Jesse Smollett, Whoopi Goldberg, she nearly died of pneumonia recently. That's just come out. And then we have the Michael Jackson. There was a recent documentary in Great Britain that came out about his possible pedophilia. And anyway, there's secret FBI files and so forth on top of that. You can go and pick up more in-depth reading on the web. But I just want to thank everyone out there for listening to us. And we're trying to make a little sense out of this. Charlotte Littlefield Brown and myself have been on the air for over 12 years now. And it'll be 13 next November. We started November 1st. 2006 was our first program, November 1st. So we've been on the air like over 12 years now. But I want to thank Charlotte Littlefield Brown for being such a big help on this. And she's probably on leave right now because she's into other things, but we certainly have appreciated her, all her hard work. We went up to Independence Mall together. We did a lot of stuff out on the campaign trail for Ron Paul, and I helped with Rand Paul some too. Anyway, we believe in standing up for what's right. We believe in liberty and freedom for all. It doesn't matter. That's why we'll reach across the aisle to anyone that's willing to speak with us or appear with us on this radio program. But I want to again thank each and every one of you out there, and I want to say that all life is precious. All life is precious. So let's try to get together. Let's try to get to a peaceful world. Let's quit all these foreign wars, all these foreign entanglements. Because Jefferson was right about that, that this is ruinous for us. So anyway, thank you for listening and good night. And we'll see you next week. Good night. Bye-bye.